So during Mishlei, we're up to what they call the 10th chapter. Mishlei Shlomo. The following proverbs were said by King Solomon. Ben Chacham Yisamach Av Uven Kisil Tugat Imo. A wise son makes his father happy, and a foolish son is the sorrow of his mother, because the father says, you can't bother me at work, so they leave him home, and the son drives the mother crazy. So a smart son, so the father brings him along, he has joy with his son, and a foolish son ends up being the sorrow of the mother because he's at home driving her crazy. So that's the simple pshat of the pasuk. We discussed that throughout Tanakh, numerous times Chazal tell us that Av is a reference to Hashem. Alohu avicha kanecha, the pasuk says in Hazinu. Hashem is your father, he's the one that created you. And Aim is a reference to Uma, to the nation. So a smart son makes his father up in heaven happy, and a foolish son is the problem of the nation. And we see this. Look today, we have a few troublemakers. I don't know if you guys know what's going on politically, but you have people who are suing other Jews on behalf of Palestinians. Right now, you have a whole Jewish community that's being sued by a group of Jews. The Palestinians gave up their claim on the land, but the Jews are still suing. So, where are we holding? Then kesil tugatimo, a foolish son is the sorrow of his mother, of his nation. I don't know of any other nation in the world that has such a thing. Their own people suing their own people on behalf of another people when those people gave up their claim. I don't know.
Tacos.
What?
And the tacos anyway.
Okay, so until now, until this 10th chapter, Shlomo HaMelech was praising the Torah. Meaning, the first third of the book was focused on the value of the Torah. And now he's turning to the son and... if you'll recall, none of you are here long enough, but about 5 years ago, we started learning Mishlei from here, from the 10th chapter, because the first 9 chapters have a recurring theme. It's important to learn Torah, it's valuable to learn Torah, it's good for you to learn Torah, everything in life revolves around Torah, you'll know how to make right decisions from Torah, Torah will affect everything you do. So the first 9 chapters are a little bit more tedious. And I wanted to get guys into it, so we started with the 10th. And then when we finished the whole series, Yehuda was already here. And Yehuda said, I want to start from the beginning. So we listened to him. Yeah. You don't even remember this. I said, let's go back to the 10th chapter. But Yehuda said, no, start from the beginning. So we did.
It's good though. Every week we get a shot in the arm from learning Torah.
Okay, I'm not complaining. But that's why Shlomo HaMelech begins again with Mishlei Shlomo, because here he's really starting a whole new section. Ben Chacham Yisamach Av. When a father sees his son acting intelligently, he is happy. I remember I was in yeshiva. My parents wanted me to leave yeshiva. They wanted me to go to college. So I was torn. I also wanted to go to college. So I decided I'm gonna compromise. I'll go to yeshiva, which I could combine with college, and I'll give myself another half a year and decide if I'm going in the direction of yeshiva or college. And after half a year, I decided I'll go another half a year. And after that half a year, I decided I'll go another half a year. And it's now we're talking 15 years later, 20 years later, I don't know, but I'm still going another half a year. So no, I'm not doing it at a half a year pace anymore. But when I was in yeshiva and I was contemplating going to college and I was pretty certain I was leaving yeshiva, one of my rabbeim said to me, he said, right now the forces are pushing you in one direction, but I'm telling you that those who stay in yeshiva and build a Torah lifestyle ultimately discover that their parents are so happy 10 years down the road, 15 years down the road, 20 years down the road, when they come back and see your children and see the home you've built and see your wife and see how respectful your wife is going to be of them and see how your wife cares for them. You wait and see. Don't think short term. Think long term. Ben Chacham Yisamach Av. If they'll have a smart son, if you will grow in Torah, believe me, ultimately they'll only be happier for it. And I think that looking around, seeing, I think that if you look around, you'll see that what he said is very true. That parents ultimately reap a lot of benefits from the children going in a Torah lifestyle. Now, could have been a Torah lifestyle combining college and Torah, whatever. But at the end of the day, if you take an approach that grows in Torah, if you take the approach of being a ben chacham towards Hashem, going in the path that the Torah wants you to go, ultimately that makes a parent happy. And this is talking about a way of life, but it's also talking about, you know, in short term. I just met a guy today who told me they're going to visit his parents out in France. And Ben Azman. So I said to him, the next Ben Azman is Pesach. So he said, yeah. So I said, you know, your parents don't keep kosher. So he said, I know. I'm gonna bring a box of matzahs along, and I'll eat matzahs by them. So I asked him, how do you think your parents are gonna feel when you're by your parents, you, your wife, your kids, and you guys are crowded around your little box of matzah, and you're not touching anything? They're not gonna be too happy, and they're gonna think you're pretty extreme, and you're gonna try to tell them, I can't eat bread, I can't eat, all year long it's difficult. You're gonna do this on Pesach? You're gonna be ridiculous. They're gonna tell you, I can't even cut salad for you. You're gonna start telling them, well, your vinegar might be chametz. What are you looking for trouble for? And I think that in general, a person has to be also a ben chacham, be a smart son. Don't just let life play itself out. Part of what we're supposed to be is we're supposed to give nachas to our parents too. There was once a couple that were dating, and the girl said to the guy that we wish a child when we circumcise him, we say, his parents should merit legadlo leTorah lechupa ulmasim tovim. His parents should merit to raise him to Torah, chupa, and good deeds. So the girl said, "You see that part of raising a child is experiencing the chupa with him too, the weight of the chupa." So she said, "You come back from a date, your parents want to know what happened, right? Let's say you don't want to tell them. Tell them what beautiful scenery you saw. Tell them what beautiful trees there were, what a breeze there was. Don't say a word about the guy, but say a million things all around. Let them feel like you're sharing life with them." And I think that's part of being a ben chacham, to give your parents a good feeling too. Part of being a decent human being is to be a person who's yisamach av, who makes his parents happy. It's not just I'm leading a Torah lifestyle. Be happy, guys. Look, I'm doing the best thing in the world. Let's do it intelligently. When our first son was born, so my parents wanted to get us a gift. I said, give us your used digital camera. This goes back 9 years ago. Back then, digital cameras weren't so common. You know, today you have a camera and every little thing you have. Almost every pen is going to have a camera soon, right? So, okay. But back then, a digital camera was a big deal. So I said, you know, you're in the U.S. We're here. If you give us a digital camera, we'll be able to send you pictures. You'll be happy. So suddenly I became a photographer. Until then, who has time to take pictures? But that's what makes parents happy. That's why I used to take pictures of you guys and send it to your parents. Okay, maybe we'll get back to that. But that's part of our responsibility, to find a way to be a yisamach av, to make our literal fathers happy too. Yeah?
So I was going to say, you said like, I mean, the whole thing with like college and the yeshiva, like, if that's still practical today, because I mean, like, I know 15 years ago, like, there were still some jobs you can get, like with a high school diploma. Now it's not really realistic that you can get anything if you want to support a family. But it's still realistic unless you want to become a rabbi or dafka, then like it's still realistic to spend like next like 15 years in yeshiva and not go to college.
It depends on the person, because I come from a family where my father's fourth generation a cheesemaker. So no one there got their job based on their degrees, because it's a business. It's a family business, and you learn on the job. So different people have different circumstances in life. Is it a good tool to have a college degree? Yeah.
I don't mean that for the sake of your parents being happy, but like,
I didn't mean for the sake of your parents. Okay. I'm saying it's a good tool. I think that there are many jobs that if a person wants to run a makolet, he doesn't need to have a college degree. There are businesses that a person can run without a college degree. I don't think it's the college degree that's necessarily going to get you certain jobs. There are other jobs. You're not going to be a doctor without a college degree. It depends on the job. Depends on a person's skills. That really depends on each person's circumstances in life. Taxi drivers don't have a college degree. On the other hand, they work 12-hour days and they make 10,000 shekel a month. Okay, so that's to each his own. It depends. A lot of it depends on what connections you have and what your skills you have and what line of work you want to go into. For many people, the college degree is a good tool. Depends on the person. Pasuk bet lo yo'ilu otzerot rehesha utzdaka tatzil mimavet. The wealth that a person hoards out of wickedness will not be beneficial. And this maybe is the biggest challenge in life. Very often we think, if I only cheat here, if I only cut this corner, I'll become wealthy. And Shlomo HaMelech tells us, this is a recurring theme in Mishlei, it will not be beneficial. And guys, you will find yourself with this challenge in life. I'm surprised at how often it comes back to haunt me too. Where you're given opportunities to do one little thing that's not exactly right, and you have a lot of excuses. Shlomo HaMelech tells you it will not be beneficial. I can tell you guys stories from today until tomorrow about people who cheated on their taxes here or got wealthy through something else there. I still remember I was invited to bar mitzvah. The bar mitzvah must have cost $50,000. Bigger than the average wedding you go to. And the guy who made the bar mitzvah was talking, and he said, people think it's so easy. There's a lot of pressure, there's a lot of work, there's a lot of, if it were so easy, then everyone would be here. And I remember hearing this line, and it stayed with me. Years later, he got caught on tax evasion. And it wasn't only tax evasion, all kinds of fraud. And the guy is serving a 20-year sentence with a lot of people waiting to bump him off. Meaning he cheated a lot of people. When it came to court, they realized his wife left him. His whole family is embarrassed by him. So here, I was at the bar mitzvah, and everyone was like enjoying all the great things that beautiful. I remember the kids when they were 7 or 8 years old. They had what's called like an arcade in their basement. Had every toy, what other kids dream about. They had on a daily basis. When we came to bar mitzvah, so the kids went down to play, and I saw a whole arcade, a basement with everything you could dream of. And this was the day before he had Nintendo and all that. And I remember the way he spoke then. But later on, it became very clear that everything he hoarded, everything was done with hanky-panky. And when he was caught, suddenly his wife demanded a divorce. His children turned their back on him. They're very embarrassed. Now they know their father's a crook. He's in jail for 20 years now. By the time he gets out of jail, I don't know if he's going to live out the sentence. He must be in his 50s or 60s now. So he's going to come out of jail. They'll take off a third for good behavior. Very good. And there are people who want to kill him when he gets out. There are people, now that they know how much they cheated him, they're ready to kill him. Where to get him? Now, if you talked to him 20 years ago, he'd tell you how great life is and how it's worth it. We're always enjoying the moment, and the recurring message of Mishlei is down the road, Hashem takes care, the nature takes care. I'm reading a fantastic book by Stephen Covey, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And he writes over there, it could be a Mishlei. It's as though he took his thoughts from Mishlei. He says, there are principles that run the world. And there are natural principles of the world. Honesty is a natural principle. And when you try to go against the natural principles of the world rectifies the situation. We have this concept in finance. When the market goes up unnaturally, it's going to come down unnaturally. There's a certain order to things. And there's a, in finance, they call it, in Hebrew they call it a tikkun. What do they call it in finance? When the market shoots up and, you know, a correction. You guys hear the term a correction? Right? Gold shot up by $200 in 2 weeks straight. So 2 weeks later, it shot down by $200 in 2 weeks straight. When it was shooting up, everyone was convinced, no, it's going to go up and up and up. No. There's a natural order of things. It's unnatural for it to shoot up that fast, make new all-time highs day after day after day. It doesn't work that way. That's not the way the world works.
So as soon as it starts going up, then.
Well, that's a tough part, but I'm saying there's a natural order. So he says it. We say it's God's hand in the world. Shlomo HaMelech repeatedly warns us, you're going to store up money in a wicked way, it will not be beneficial ultimately. Lo yo'ilu. It won't help. Utzdakah tatzil mimavet. Tzedakah, you think it's the other way around. What are you doing when you're giving charity? You're parting with your money. So you think, if I wanted to save my life, I should hold on to my money. Comes Shlomo HaMelech and tells us, Utzdakah, and if you give charity, you help other people in their time of need. Tatzil mimavet. That's what saves a person from death. And this is also a recurring theme in the world. You don't need Shlomo HaMelech for this. You guys know the French classic, Les Miserables? Yeah? Les Miserables. Yeah. No, it's a book this thick. Say it in Dutch, I don't know. Okay, it's a whole book, very boring, very long, but it has one theme to the book. There's a guy who, at the age of 19, he steals a loaf of bread because his family is dying of hunger. They throw him in jail. This is in France before the revolution. And they're not going to let him out of jail. And he's there and he's working and he's very powerful. And he did it to save his family from hunger, but no one cares. They're very cruel. And wherever he goes, he helps people. In the jail, he helps people. And at one point, they're working and he sees a way out. He dives into the river. And they shoot after him, and he swims, he's very powerful, and he escapes. And he rebuilds his life under a new name, and there's a policeman who's always chasing him. There's a policeman who's made it his vendetta in life to catch this guy who escaped from the jail. And the whole story is about how wherever he goes, he's a kind man. Whatever he does, he does kindness onto other people. As a governor, he helps people. One time he's traveling in his chariot, and he sees on the side of the road there was an accident. A chariot broke, and it was crushing a man to death. So even though he's the governor, and he's dressed in all his beautiful garb, he runs out of his chariot, and he himself, he's a powerful man, lifts the chariot to save the guy's life. He doesn't care that he's getting himself dirty. And this is a recurring theme. Wherever he goes, he's helping people. And this policeman is always on his tail. And he takes in an orphan girl and he raises her as though she's his own daughter. And there's a whole story how every time he does kindness wherever he can go, and then every time he's in trouble when he's on the run from this policeman, every time somehow the kindness he did 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago comes back to save him. Every time he bumps into someone who he helped him years ago, and that person helps him. Until finally, at the end of the story, it's the French Revolution, and this policeman is chasing after him, and in the revolt, they catch the policeman. And they tell him, okay, now you could kill him. The man's been chasing you his whole life. Now you're free. You could do whatever you want to him. And he takes him away, and he tells the policeman, now go. And he takes off his handcuffs and says, go. So the policeman says, you could kill me. Game over. And he says, no, I have no reason to kill you. Go. You're free. And the policeman commits suicide. At the end of the book, he commits suicide because he realizes his whole life he's been chasing this guy. He's such a villain. His whole life he's been chasing him. The whole theme of the story is Utzdakah Tatzil Mimavet. These three words of Mishlei. You do good. Don't think you're losing by helping other people. You're gaining. That's what ultimately saves a person from death. Utzdakah Tatzil Mimavet. And Chazal told us so many stories about this pasuk. Chazal tell us the story that there was once a Roman soldier that was shipwrecked. And he was naked. He came onto the beaches of Israel. And all the Jews were standing there laughing at him. And one of the Tanoim walked by, one of the rabbis, and he said, it's a human being. What are you guys laughing at? They said, oh, he's hiding behind the stone. He's all naked. He's a Roman. We hate him. And the rabbi said, how could you talk that way? And he quickly brought clothing and he dressed the Roman soldier. And he took care of him and he sent him his way. Years later, the Roman emperor made a decree against the Jews. and the Jews didn't see how they'd get out of it. They sent this rabbi to the emperor. So the rabbi went to the emperor and he started talking to him, and the emperor says to him, you remember me? So he says, no, where'd we ever meet? So the emperor tells him, I was that soldier. And because the rabbi took care of the soldier, so now when he became the emperor, the emperor said, you know, if it were for the other Jews, I'd continue my decree because of how they treated me. But you're the rabbi, I'm willing to annul the decree. Tzedakah tatzil mimavet. The charity we do saves from death. You guys know the story of the Rabbi Cheska Landau, the chief rabbi of Prague? No? He was walking in the marketplace one day, and there was a non-Jewish boy who was weeping on the side. So he turned to the boy and he asked him, what's wrong? So the boy says, I'm an orphan. I have an uncle who's a cruel baker, and I'm responsible to sell all his baked goods out here in the marketplace. And today, after I finish selling everything, I see I lost my wallet. I don't know where all the money went. And my uncle's going to beat me silly because I lost all the money and he beats me. So Rabbi Yecheskel Landau, otherwise known as the Noda B'Yehuda, chief rabbi of Prague, said to the boy, don't worry, come home with me. And he went home and he took from his own money. He asked him, how much money are you, do you have to bring to your uncle? And he gave him the money. Non-Jewish boy. So the guy said, the kid said, I don't have any money. How am I ever going to pay you back? So the rabbi said, you're not going to pay me back. It's fine, you're a human being, and I'm happy to help you. Go and be well. Fine. Years later, it's the middle of Pesach, and there's a knock on Rabbi Cheska Landau's door. It's the middle of the night. He sees a non-Jewish boy, a non-Jewish young man standing outside his door, and he says, hey, Rabbi, I have to talk to you now. So he takes the young man in, and he says to him, you remember me? So he says, no, who are you? He says, years ago I was an orphan, and I was scared my uncle would beat me, and you took me in. So he remembered the story. So he said, okay, now I came back to repay the kindness you did to me. The bakers in town all know, the non-Jewish bakers, that the morning after Passover, you guys don't have any bread, because you guys can't bake. So you all come to our bakeries to buy bread. So they prepared poison for all the baked goods they're going to sell you the morning after Pesach, and they figure they're going to destroy, kill most of the town, the Jews in town, and then they'll take over your houses and everything. You'll all suddenly mysteriously get sick, you're all going to die, and they're going to take over your town. I'm telling you, there's going to be poison in the bread. I was there by my uncle with the meeting. The morning after Passover, they're going to kill out all the Jews. Now it's your job to take care of it. I came back to repay the kindness. So Rabbi Cheska Landau came to shul. It was the seventh day, the final day of Pesach. Everyone's come to shul. The rabbi announced that he has a special speech. He needs everyone to congregate in shul. They gather. The whole city comes to shul, and he says, I'm sorry to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, we made an error in our calculation of the calendar. It was the eighth day of Pesach. I'm sorry, in Chutzlarts you have 8 days, right? So it was the eighth day. He said, we made a mistake in our calculation. And not only is today Passover, but tomorrow is also Passover. We made a mistake. We were 1 day off. So we have to keep Passover one more day. We were 1 day off on everything we said. So this year, Passover is extended one more day. Tonight, you all go home and make Kiddush. Tonight, no one's allowed to do any work. No buying bread tomorrow. Passover is only out tomorrow night. So everyone, the whole town is like, wow, this never happened before. They all go home. They make Kiddush. The next morning, they come to shul for Yom Tov davening. And the rabbi doesn't show. The non-Jewish bakers have baked all the bread filled with poison, and they're waiting for the Jewish customers to come in, and no one comes in. So they wait an hour, 2 hours, no one comes in. They grab a Jew and they say, what's going on here? So the Jew says, well, the rabbi said that Passover is extended this year one more day. So the bakers sued Rabbi Landau, and because he couldn't go into shul that morning, they took the police and they sued him. They said, we're going to lose all our bread. This is a tremendous loss. He can't do it to us. So when the rabbi came to court, he said, I'm willing to pay them, but they each have to eat from the bread. So, of course, the bakers refused to eat from the bread. So he said, the reason we extended Passover is because we know that there's poison in the bread. So the bakers denied it, so they brought the bread, and they told the bakers, okay, either eat or pay up. So the bakers said, no, we can't eat. Who knows? Maybe the Jews, So they fed it to a dog, and the dog dropped dead. So they put the bakers in jail, and that's how the city of Prague was saved. Because of one act of kindness. He spent money. He didn't take money. Tells us Shlomo HaMelech, tzedakah. giving out money to help other people, tatzil mimavet, saves from death. Tzedakah, tatzil mimavet. So that's the balance that Shlomo HaMelech shows us. Lo yo'ilu otzrot resha, taking in money in a wicked way will not be beneficial in the long run. Utzdakah, and shelling out money to help other people, tatzil mimavet, saves from death.
Yeah. Actually believe that we should be the minority. You know, we've always been a minority throughout history. We're the chosen people, not the only people, right? So we're the head. We have responsibility to take care of the people under us. Like, it's like, you know, Adam and Eve led the charge of, like, creation. So it's really just kind of like the keepers of the world, so to speak. So we should help out our fellow human beings. That's something I found admirable about Judaism, is that we're not like, oh, if you're not part of us, you're not even worth talking to, or, you know, we're going to hit you. Or we're like, no, we're going to help you out. Even if we don't think we're going to get anything out of it, per se, that...
Right. I would add to that something that I've only started realizing in the last few years. You could view it the way you said, which I have no issue with, but I realized something else. Part of what we see, if you analyze what's going on in light of the Rambam in Igeret Teiman, the Rambam says the other religions are mimicking. They're trying to copy. So they can't be identical. So they take concepts which the Torah gives you in perfect balance, and they take them off balance. And that's every time I see these concepts, like you said, but you'll see it throughout. You always see the balance, and then you see these take it to that extreme, and these take it to that extreme, but they're both way off. And when you look at it that way, you suddenly say to yourself, ah, right, okay, if you're inventing a religion so you could mimic, but you can't be the same. If you can't be the same, so you're going to have to be off. And then you start seeing how being slightly off on one point leads to being tremendously off in the long run, like you just said. Right, yeah. Yeah.
So just off that point, because... one of the words he's used, I just want to know, like, cause he said, like, we're like the head, but we have a responsibility to take care of the rest. So I'm just wondering, is there a responsibility, or is it just an admirable thing to do? Like, where does it fall, like, in terms of halakha? Like,
depends what. In certain things, it's admirable. Like it says, Hashem likes the people who, a righteous person doesn't give a loan with interest, even to a non-Jew. Even though he's permitted to give a non-Jew interest, just like he's permitted to pay interest, he's permitted to collect interest. But it's a level of righteousness. And then on other things, it's considered a minimum. You're not allowed to harm a non-Jew. You're not allowed to steal from a non-Jew. Meaning there are certain things that are basic. There are certain things that should be a reflection of who you are. You should be a kind person, and therefore you shouldn't do certain things. And then there are certain things that are levels of piety. It depends. It depends what.
So the examples that you gave of, like, what we're, like, obligated to, those were, like, kind of, like, lotas. Like, is there anything, like, that we are obligated to do in order to benefit?
It says that when you have a carcass, you have an animal that became non-kosher, so you could either give it to your dog, right, your dog food, or you could give it to your non-Jewish neighbor here in Israel. So it says give it to your non-Jewish neighbor. You should prefer to give it to your non-Jewish neighbor as a gift for free than to give it to the dog. You'll say, but I need to give dog food to my dog. Why shouldn't I give it to my dog? The answer is no. You have a non-Jewish neighbor who keeps the Noahide laws. Give it to him. You should prefer that. For example, and there are other examples, but you want it in essay, so I give you one. Okay? Pasuk Gimel. Lo yariv Adonai nefesh tzadik vavat reshaim yedof. Lo yariv Hashem nefesh tzadik. Hashem does not make the nefesh, the life of the righteous, starve. So, this, if you think about it, at first glance, this is very problematic. I would think that Hashem makes the righteous have it good. What does the pasuk say? They won't starve. Gee, thanks. If I'm not, you know, wouldn't you expect more? So one understanding says, even at a time of famine, they won't starve. That's okay, fine. Another understanding says that part of being a righteous person is that the person isn't looking for all the amenities in life. That's not what his focus is on. The Talmud tells us that the sages in the Gemara were careful not to waste. So they'd only buy what they needed. They didn't buy more than they needed. And one of the sages was lying on his deathbed, and they told him he has a little bit of spice left in the cupboard. So he said, oh boy, what a waste. A little bit of spice, you know. So why? Because if you view life as an opportunity to do mitzvot, so then anything that takes away from that is a waste. Why should I waste my time earning the money to buy that spice? I didn't need it. I didn't use it. If I didn't need it, so I wasted energy. I could have used that energy to help another orphan, to help another widow. The question is, how do you view life? If life is a series of opportunities to do kindness, to help move the world forward, I don't want to waste my time earning $1 million. It's not worth my time. I have bigger and better things to do with my time. So sometimes money is a tool. Very good. Yeah, you had wealthy rabbis. Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, you had a rabbi, the Talmud says, that owned thousands of cities. He had vast amounts of real estate that he never visited. He went to yeshiva and left it in charge of other people. He said, why should I waste my time? He inherited it all. And he said, I have better things to do with my time. But usually the assumption is that you have to work to make ends meet. And the tzaddik is focused on advancing the world. So what he wants is not to starve. He's not looking to have steak dinners. He's looking to have what he needs. So the pasuk says Hashem gives him the minimum he needs because that's all he's interested in. That's part of being a tzaddik. Lo yariv Hashem nefesh tzaddik v'havat resha'im yehidof. The havat comes from the word hoveh, to break. The tzaddik is interested in building the world, in advancing the world. The rasha, a wicked person, is interested in making problems, in destroying things. And the destruction that a wicked person brings to the world pushes himself over the cliff, pushes himself over the edge. Very often we see this. There are many examples to this. Va'avat resha'im, the breaking that the wicked do, yehedof, pushes themselves. Ultimately, it proves to be their own downfall.